Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Can you dig it?
Whoa. My headphones are up high today. Welcome, Mike.
Welcome, Judy. We're having a meat party today, baby.
Yeah, but we're getting a vegetarian pizza. That was an oversight. We're here with Mike Edison and Patrick Martins.
Wait, so I'm actually a guest today.
You're one of the guests, yes.
It's much more fun being a guest than it is being a host, actually.
Co-authors, Patrick's book, The Carnivore's Manifesto, Eating Well, Eating Responsibly, and Eating Meat. Welcome, Patrick.
Thanks for having me.
Patrick, who is also our corporate suit here at the Heritage Radio Network.
If we mock him, we could get fired.
We're now airing Arts and Seizures at 7 a.m. on Mondays.
Excellent. Drive time, baby. That's okay. So tell us, why did you write this? What prompted you to write this book? I know you sell meat.
Have you said the name of it?
Yes, I read the entire thing, including subtitles, Stoner.
Okay. Carnivore's Manifesto. I had always known that there were all these accumulated things I'd heard, fun experiences I've had, thanks to all the great people I've gotten to work with and collaborate with over the years, all these fun foods I was able to taste over the years. And I knew that some document eventually needed to be written that kind of accumulated all these really unusual experiences in the food world I'd had. But there was no catalyst until I met Mike, you know, which just happened. Planets passing,
magic
stars
happened.
Shooting.
I got my start right on Patrick's radio show, the main course.
Yeah, you were like Joan Rivers, kind of, weren't you? You were the person who would
I was like Robin Quivers.
Robin Quivers.
I was the black woman that legitimized your foul mouth.
I mean, growing up, was your family conscientious about what they ate, or did you eat McDonald's like every other kid, or...
I think we were conscientious about the recipes, but not the ingredients. Mm-hmm. And I was growing up in the 70s, so, you know, a lot of people went to the same few places to buy all the food. But something tells me commodity foods were better back in the 70s, you know, before high-tech science had emptied the calories in a way.
And before, I mean, that wasn't really a time of high fructose corn syrup, was it?
No, I mean, even I also remember, like, for instance, Lucky Charms and things like that tasting better. So there
Do you think they really tasted
yeah.
better?
Well, listen, this is what I'm saying, because you could say, oh, it's because I was a kid, but I do think Sunkist might have had more sweet, real juice in it.
The prizes
were
better.
I think the marshmallows were made less artificially, because the technology might not have even existed.
The purple moons and the green clovers?
Yeah, I think they become more...
Or actually made from moons and clovers.
Yeah, more plastic.
They're better prizes, though, in those days.
Yeah, well, there's no more peanuts in Cracker Jacks.
Know,
you only get the popcorn.
No more peanuts and the oh, Cracker
Stuff
Jack
like
prizes.
That. It was better.
The best Cracker Jack prize. I liked the harmonica. It was like 9 pieces. I mean, you had to kind of be like
you had to assemble it.
You had to be like an astrophysicist to figure this thing out. Mm-hmm. And that was a great prize. Now, the last time I bought Cracker Jacks, and wow, there are no peanuts. I don't think I twigged to that. But it was like I don't know. It was like a tattoo that didn't even work. You know,
they used to
have moving parts, musical instruments with moving parts in a box of Cracker Jacks.
Those were the days.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of grandpa stories here, Judy.
So you you started working with Carlo Petrini in Italy on the slow food movement. What prompted you to open a business, Heritage Meats, which founded Heritage Radio?
Well, eventually we had worked with so many farmers, many of them, but one in particular, Frank Reese, who raised Heritage Turkeys, who was a member, his breeds were members of the U.S. Arc of Taste. So, you know, there was a following around.
What is the Arc of Taste?
It's like a metaphorical arc onto which you board foods on the brink of extinction.
Two by two.
So eggplants, no, but also eggplants or cabbages or a grape variety that might have existed only on this one slope off the hills of Western Italy or, what do they call that, Cento, what is that called? Oh, now I'm not going to, they're those very high-hilled things, and I think Lombardia. Anyway, they tried to save these endangered foods. And so one of the first items to get boarded on the U.S. arc, you know, where we're trying to raise awareness for these foods. Because remember, like with turkeys, in order to save them, you have to eat them. Because their job is to be food. So if you want these not to be on the endangered species list, they have to become active parts of the market and raised in larger numbers.
So this guy was breeding them. And you started selling them. Mm-hmm. What is the difference, like, for the average Thanksgiving person between, like, a butterball with that handy timer and one of these turkeys? You know, why should I spend, like, five times as much money?
Well, if this, to make a metaphor for the radio, it would be like the Mike and Judy show on top versus any other show on the network.
I totally understand.
Thank
now.
You.
Thank you, Patrick. Well, what about getting these foods into, like, poor neighborhoods where there are food deserts? You talk a little bit about Wholesome Wave, double value coupons.
Well, we are actually coming to the whole cost issue from this perspective. I mean, basically, the end result is maybe people need to eat less meat. Remember, we're just mm-hmm. talking about meat. We're not talking about fruits and vegetables right. and things like that. People probably just said that's the end result. But the way we get there is that somehow I think in America we've developed this double standard of what we tell poor people.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever the minority is, we might change what we tell them. And that's actually not right. There's certain truths. And the truth is that the industrial turkey or chicken has things that happen to it, like it you know, was genetically modified to grow too fast and was unhealthy. It needed antibiotics in its feed to just survive its short life. It never saw the light of day. You know, the company that raised these animals might not have dealt with the waste effectively, and it poisoned a river. And then the workers might not have been paid fairly. And then you ask the question, who are we recommending that food to? And it's all people, rich or poor. The turkey they should be aspiring to is one that costs $140. Now, we're very realistic. We're not like a utopia. We eat bacon, egg, and cheeses all the time. I have a club sandwich for lunch today. That's fine. It's about the slow turning of the wheel. And for the slow turning, one fact is true, and that's we should be eating pasture-raised, antibiotic-free, heritage-breed meat.
Actually, one reason I enjoyed working with Patrick on this is because the orthodoxy wasn't such like in the Omnivore's Dilemma or the Food Rules, Michael Pollan's books, where you shouldn't eat anything that changes the color of the milk or anything that you can't pronounce because we like Malamars. And, you know,
I thought the best part of writing the book was the free pork chops you'd come up with.
Oh, man.
Money.
Well,
you tried a lot of stuff.
I got the pork perquisite. The goat chili that I made with the Heritage Goat was, I got raves for it.
Oh, good.
You know, even from some people's like, goat, are you kidding me, Mike? This goat. But goat is fantastic. And no, it's definitely a perquisite. I like doing these food books.
Yeah, I mean, this is your second one. What was it like working with Patrick? I mean, I know you.
Well, he's like the Tracy Morgan
Joe,
of meat.
Cut the feed.
The Tracy Morgan of meat. I never know what the fuck's going to come out of his mouth.
Or go into it. You were hoping. I'm sorry I had to reject you.
You know, I think aside from his lovely wife, Anne, I may be the only person on the planet who understands what the fuck he's talking about. But that's okay. That's why I'm making the big bucks.
There was in The Right Stuff, that great movie. The second guy who went up, he actually had a bad thing. He blew the hatch. His name was Gus Grissom. And
yeah,
Gus
yeah.
is, I kind of imagine me, Gus would
you
be like,
you blew the hatch.
The man needs a window. And they'd be like, what is he saying? And they're like, what Gus is saying is that if the astronaut is the, you know.
Well, you certainly do travel the space ways. I've been in orbit with you plenty of times writing this book. No, it was good. It was fun. you know.
We have to be in a lot of places. Our minds have to jump around because it's 53-page essays. Each point is its own point, in and out in that, two or three pages.
That's
so.
That's
you jump
challenge.
A lot.
Well, I mean, we never come back really to the same concept in any one of the 50 chapters, so it's exciting. You never get bored on a subject because it's 2 pages later.
But that's
you won't
a great challenge to write 50 separate essays, even harder, even though this book is half the length of, say, Joe Bastianich's book, which I worked on. There's a lot of connective narrative tissue, and they were telling a story. Mm-hmm. There's a thread that runs through the whole thing, but to have 50 separate ideas.
Yeah.
And develop them properly. Now, of course, we definitely spent a little time in the ghetto with some of these ideas. I mean, I thought we really hit the nadir with I Am a Goat.
Well, will you read a piece of that? Yeah, and you know, Anne did the drawing of that.
And,
oh, what
and Anne did all the drawings in the book, you know, and Saxoby.
I had the awesome pleasure of reading the audiobook. I was the narrator in the audiobook of the Carnivore's Manifesto. So I sort of had to get in character. I employed the Stanislavski method to be the cow. Because once we had I Am a Goat, it's like, oh, well, I'm a cow.
And, page 163.
I am a pig. So I really had to get into character. Who is your favorite cartoon pig?
Babe, 100%.
That's not a cartoon pig.
Yes.
Who's your favorite movie pig? Let's say.
It's Mouth Movie.
Better than Arnold Ziffel.
Well, Arnold was pretty high up there.
Which was Arnold? Wasn't Green, that Green Acres? Acres? Yeah. Okay.
Yes, Zsa Zsa.
This is a very Zsa Zsa goat.
Yes.
That goat's got some attitude.
That goat is fancy.
Oddly, the goat.
He's very, he has a lot of hubris.
The goat sounds like Gilbert Gottfried a little bit when he reads.
How did you read him for the audiobook?
A little bit like Gilbert Gottfried. I don't know how it came out. The cow's kind of slow and stoned, and I'm a ruminant. And that stupid pig is not the only one who's been on the cover of a Pink Floyd record.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got caught up in the book.
You got so caught up in my...
Look at page 183.
I lulled you with my cow voice.
Oh, wow. So
that's like a Rasta-looking bison, and we did one chapter on Ted Turner because...
because Ted Turner all tried to take over the professional wrestling business.
I love that you read that in. That was great. Well, explain it.
I love that there's a reference to Andre the Giant throughout this book. Mm-hmm. this fantasy we built about Andre the Giant's parents having, you know, raising cows in the hills in France.
Was there professional wrestling in Bastianich's book? Did you manage to work that
no,
in?
No, but you know what's in every single book I've written, including my own and Joe's book and Patrick's book, are references to Liberace.
Okay. Yeah,
that's my tag.
And
so
this is what Mike wrote on this sentence. His celebrity as a self-made billionaire looms large, as does his infamy for controversial sound bites and his failed bid to take over professional wrestling. But as an environmentalist, he has few peers. And then I wrote the entire rest of the book.
Did you ever have to rein Mike in and say, like, Mike, you don't sound like me at all?
No, I mean, this book sounds a lot like Mike also. I mean, that's why I think we came to, you know, collaborate well. We have similar, maybe, I don't know, abrupt, I don't know what the word is, style. I mean, Mike, I can say that.
I knew,
he's abrupt.
I knew the
You're
word.
Abrupt.
But I knew the word. why I got paid.
I will say about co-writing, everyone's like, I'd like to write a book. What most people should say is, who could I co-write a book with? Because the command of vocabulary and cultural references that co-writers are supposed to have when they're at their height, like Mike. I mean, Mike's one of the best, if not the best. I can't tell you how important that is. You know, and I said, if it's like a tapestry, that's the silk thread that weaves all of the parts together. And it's in every sentence.
And it's hackneyed cliches like that, which is why I'm the writer of the family.
Although, I did
Mike,
write most
saying
of it.
Nice things about... Yeah, take it
I,
back.
No. But I mean, I did write... I mean, most of these ideas were ideas I had already written down pretty well, you know... But it was a great collaboration.
No, and I'm fortunate. Patrick was very, very much a mention, very generous while writing it. And also, we worked a lot in his warehouse, which is, like, you know, loaded with pork chops and lamb chops.
So he
was
just
pork
like,
chops.
We did fight, though, because it's hard. I mean, writing 50, and you have a deadline, and you don't know if you'll make it.
I got a little heated once in a while. Because
you're both high-strung.
But you wake up every...
Whoa. Wait,
time out.
Wait 1 second here.
Roll the music,
high-strung?
Roll the music.
I'm the most laid-back guy ever.
You can both be a little high-strung, and I mean that
I
in a nice way.
I don't even know what
it's
that
like,
metaphor is. High-strung? Like what?
I'm like a little slice of heaven.
I've never even familiarized myself with that word, so it has no effect on me.
While you guys yell at me...
I am a cow.
It's time to hear from Engineer to the Star, Joe...
Joe Galarraga.
Galarraga's back from tour.
Oh, hey, Joe.
With big ups. Welcome back, Joe.
Joe, we missed you.
Joe, you going to catch it for me while we're on tour promoting the Carnivores Manifesto?
Yeah, I'm going to be drinking wine with Jeep, sir, and we're going to be, Prosecco, bathrobes. I've been planning it out. It's going
to
be awesome.
That sounds good. All right, you listen to Arts and Seizures here on Heritage Radio. Let's give a spin with Joe Galarraga and the big ups. See you in a second. Back, can you dig it? Here on Arts and Seizures.
Mr. Business is on the phone, even though we always put our phones on airplane mode.
He's like the LeBron James of meat. Hey, superstar, get off the fucking phone.
Nine for cheddar cheese, and I will call him and see if he wants to.
While he's doing business, we should talk about our new book, The Potato Manifesto. Oh,
well, potatoes, Jews and Irish have that in common.
We love potatoes.
You also love your starchy foods.
I'm going to make you a nice potato kugel.
I will make you the most delicious garlic mashed potatoes.
Oh, nice.
The Greek potatoes I make.
Greek potatoes.
Oh, so good.
I'm a big fan of the au gratin.
Oh, I love the
au gratin. Dirty mashed.
What is a bad potato dish? Without any potatoes.
I love a patata gratin.
Tortilla de
patata. Grenoblois with the milk in it. Ooh, man.
Nice. What is that?
Grenoblois.
Ooh.
Mais tu connais, vous connaissez pas le patate grenoblois?
Oh, Tish, I love it when you speak French.
Il y a le lait, il y a les patates qui sont coupées fin.
He's making my blood boil when he
pas
speaks French.
Pas trop fin, mais fin.
I'm like Gomez Adams over here. I'm going to start chewing on his arm any goddamn second, right?
Mais c'est important de brûler le top.
Il faut brûler pas on top, that means like
no,
the fire.
No,
like
no, a, no,
like,
don't try to.
Listen, any food that involves a blowtorch.
Get a co-writer on that one.
So coming soon, the Potato Manifesto.
Yes.
But we're talking about the meat book.
No, I think a Potato Manifesto, what would its main call to arms be?
Potatoes.
Boiling oil.
This is a recipe book. This is not a manifesto.
Boiling oil.
Boil oil, cheese.
When hot oil hits a potato.
Beautiful things happen.
But there's also a fondue tradition where you dip potatoes into boiling oil.
I do that so good.
Yeah.
All right, well, party at Judy's house.
Well, we came up with the Rabelaisian feast where we picked our favorite items and talked about it.
And extreme. Well, that's another thing about this book, too, is like, which, I enjoy, like, the spirit of eating. Not just, cooking, but like of eating and really getting down with it and really throwing down hard, like a medieval feast.
In our desire to be careful, we never let ourselves go. And that's a problem. Then you're never really ever fulfilled, and that's sad.
Well, everything in moderation, but especially moderation.
He came up with some great quotes from the book. I mean, cultural references.
Well, we're talking about feasting.
West,
like, well,
Mae Liberace.
Mae West, as purloined by Liberace, the king of conspicuous consumption, too much of a good thing is wonderful.
And then what's the one about routine and habit and... That's Oscar Wilde, I think.
Oscar Wilde. But, we're going to go out on the road, right, Patrick? We went out on the road?
Yep. We have very fun events planned at Roberta's this Tuesday. I don't know when the show is Tuesday, June 10th.
Yeah. Yes, come to Roberta's here in Bushwick and have a big meat party with us.
And then we have about 9 event stops in San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland, and...
We're like Eugene. Seattle? We're like,
Eugene. I'm so excited about Eugene.
Why?
And Portland. Eugene is great.
You know, there used to be a professional wrestler.
Those people need this book.
There was a professional wrestler named Eugene, and his gimmick was he was like mentally deficient, challenged. He was a retard. There, I said it.
Oh, man.
It was a good gimmick.
You're going to get us thrown off the air, Mike.
130 shows later, if I haven't yet, I think we're in some pretty safe territory.
You're our cleanup hitter at 3 a.m.
You told me to go ahead and read this.
I thought we were like the morning zoo crew.
3 a.m. There's a lot of people work nights.
Let's talk about the sex cells chapter, because Patrick wanted to cover that. About, like, goats having sex like bunnies.
Taking food porn to a whole new level.
Juicy turkey breasts.
Well, tell them about the life on the industrial farm.
Well, this is a book that also advocates sleeping with your butcher, so...
And cheesemonger and bartender. But, I mean, these animals... Everything is artificially inseminated.
You know,
there's no sex happening on any industrial farm anywhere.
You know, why is there always
animals
you know,
should be allowed to you know get it
you
on?
Know, you're reading your Charles Dickens, who's very Dickensian, I find.
Yes, he is probably one of the top.
And you know, they're always eating goose at Christmas, and you wonder why? Because it's in season; it's natural.
They have sex in the winter. They're born in the spring. The grasses grow and stuff happens.
But turkeys and these birds, I mean, that's when they're naturally mated. In the spring, lambs, you know, you talk about Passover and Easter. It's not just a convenient symbolism.
Basically, everything is growing to get you through winter.
Actually,
except for chickens and cows and pigs, which have sex all the time.
So, like, Goat-tober happens because the cute little baby goats have matured into edible goats?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Goats are delicious.
And by the way, you know what's challenging for cheese people.
But the
attitude. You know, to make cheese, you need milk. And to make milk, animals need to be having babies all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting, where do all the males go on dairies? You know, it's
where do they go?
Well, to, you know, meat. But that's, you know, those should be raised sustainably and, you know, not like as an offshoot. It should be its own industry as well.
I mean, is there any danger that we would, if we got rid of industrial farming and relied on smaller farmers, is there a danger that we would run out of food and starve to death as a country?
That worked once upon a time.
Cut the stream. Cut the stream. No, first of all, the industrial food complex, mm-hmm. which currently runs 98% of the system,
right.
is not feeding the whole world now. So we are both not succeeding. I mean, we're not even being given the opportunity. But I guarantee you, if given the opportunity, mankind would step up.
You know,
step down.
You shouldn't be buying your food from a company, from a publicly traded company, because they're looking at the bottom line and food production and those kind of profits.
Dividend
are you know, it's a terrible concept.
And
it's the wrong motivation.
So how does someone shop ethically according to like a carnivore's manifesto?
You got to get stoned and then go to Fairway.
the chapter that got 86th from this book was about getting stoned and going to the supermarket, which really was my tour de force in soon to be in motion. You're just gonna have to wait for the movie.
No,
you wouldn't just come home with like Twinkies and
you know what happened? I got properly stoned and I went to Fairway, which is, let me tell you something. You know, you smoke half a joint of that hair metal pot, whatever the. You know, and the produce section, it's like day 3 at the Monterey Pop Festival. I mean, it's happening. But what happened was, you know, yeah, you'd think I'd be loading up on Ready Whip and Fudge Town cookies and whatnot. But really, I went right for the butcher, and I got all sorts of organic lamb chops and mm-hmm. Lots of beer. But the idea,
how unlike you,
but the Mike. The idea is that I find the biggest question facing...
No, he loved everything. This was like a circus. He was going through. You were seeing colors.
It's
you
wonderful.
Were seeing
it's like
delicious home things that, you know, comfort foods, you know, that you grew up
but the,
with.
But the idea is that...
Bagels.
I find
he fell in love with the bagels section.
Let me tell you something. The bagels at Fairway
are like,
I don't know what's going on over there, but they're doing something right. The bagels at Fairway will go toe-to-toe, mano-a-mano with any bagel in New York.
The funny thing
this
about
is
him,
what a Lost in the Supermarket is about by Joe Strummer. This is what he was talking about, actually.
Oh, interesting. Can you play a riff of that without him suing us?
He's dead.
Oh, his estate?
But stay tuned to Arts and Seizures, because one day we're bringing him back.
Oh, gosh.
I wish.
Our psychic never came through for us.
No, our psychic.
You know, we were going to get a psychic to come do a seance on arts and seizures. Wow. And of course, like, well, who should we talk to? Like, I don't know. I know Jimi Hendrix, Elvis.
Let me check
Strummer.
Out the
Not
nice
like
table.
Jesus or St. Thomas Aquinas or, you know, or Moses, you know.
Well, that's who she wanted.
Somebody worthwhile. Elvis. We're so shallow.
No, she didn't come on the show. Instead, two people who went to one of her seances did and said she sucked. So we don't need to.
But, there you have it.
Table has to move. If the table doesn't move, it's a disappointment.
So married to a cheesemonger, you guys must have the best dinners ever.
Oui.
Oh, Tish.
No, actually, yeah, you know, our lives, it's more... her contribution is, like, I get home and I eat, like, $20 worth of cheese. No, not $20, but, you know, I'll just... I eat
$20 worth of cheese isn't that much.
Actually, you're wrong. The charcuterie and cheese are actually the cheapest foods they are. They just have to be eaten somewhat in moderation and, like, with a pasta. But, you know, a little wheel over cheese, or I can give an example better with, you know, Armandino Batali's salumi made in Seattle.
Man, that salami is
it's the thinnest slice. The thinnest slice. So you can eat... a tenth of an and you know, tenth true. Of a pound and feel fulfilled, and that's an appetizer.
That's like a $20 salami. I mean,
but that still only costs you 80 cents.
But when it's got so much flavor in it, and you slice it so you can see through it.
See it through it.
And, you know, because when I first got it, when you gave it to me, it was mind-boggling how good it was.
It trusts you to make the slices. I mean, if you make a huge slice and treat it like a commodity salami, which is how much you have to eat of it to even get, like, some mouthfeel.
Dude, that salami was a little game-changer. And it came with a little bell on it. It was like a little ribbon and a bell that my cat loved.
That's a great little store.
You're back to the fairway thing. Fairway. With the bell on it?
No, the Mario, the Batali salumi had a little ribbon and a bell on it. It was like this nice little package.
There's never been.
It was the gay touch. And you always need the gay. You always need the gay touch. A slice of avocado with brunch.
So anyway, the fairway thing was a very, very fun chapter. But, you know, that got taken out of the book.
Well, I think, you know.
Because of the drugs reference, do you think?
Because we would never use drugs. We did. We actually do speak, though, about marijuana. At some length in the book, in a chapter about tetoir, which is a word that Patrick invented, and it's also is my way of getting him to speak more French, because you're making me so hot.
Merci.
But tetoir, and you'll explain it better, but tetoir is to the mind what terroir is to the soil.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more.
Well, you know what terroir is. It influences how certain foods taste, and tetoir builds when one creative person passes on skills or knowledge to another creative person. Like Joe is a lead singer and he's getting, let's say he's like 98 years old and he's at the hospice. He'll go to one of those new up and coming boy bands and be like, hey kid, I'm going to tell you, you're moving your hips wrong. You got to put more into it. You call that a scream? I'll scream for you.
Well, it was definitely a tetoir.
That's tetoir being passed. That's not a soil agricultural thing. And
it's a cultural thing.
It's a cultural
thing. It sounds like you'd be pretty good at it, Patrick, actually. You've got all the secrets.
I'm more of a...
It sounds like you've been watching a lot of boy bands.
I'm more of a Ringo star.
Oh, okay.
Oh, awkward silence.
Well, I have that effect on
me. Now that Patrick and I have sucked all the air out of the room. Yeah. But we are taking this on the road. We are the Merry Pranksters of Meat. We're going on a mystery.
We're renting a van. Oh, well, Little Brown is renting a van for us, Merry, thanks to you.
The Merry Pranksters, because I know how to talk to these people.
Who is going to be on your little caravan of crazy?
Well, the executive director, she could pull the plug on this show like this. I'd still have to go through people. She just takes your little thing out of the switchboard and no one can hear you.
So you have, it's you two. Is Aaron going?
Aaron's coming along with us.
She's the executive director.
And, okay. Pretty much the entire staff of Heritage Food. But we are driving from San Francisco, which is also going to encompass a gig in Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. And
Healdsburg, St. Helena.
Where can we find the itinerary? So our
on the Heritage Foods USA blog. And if you're very close to Mike or Judy, there's one private event that's happening. And, you know, we'd love for a few people to come to that, too.
Only close friends.
And as ever, it has been the fastest half hour on the internet today.
Little Brown, Carnivore's Manifesto, Hatchet Group. Don't go to Amazon. They're having a war
with each
other.
We're getting beaten up.
Go to BarnesandNoble.com or your local bookstore.
Our Word bookstore, Powell's.
And please, that's right.
Powell's on the West
Coast. Support your local bookseller.
Go
we'll
to Powell's. No, wait. change that. Everyone go to Powell's.
And you can order
it's
online.
It's in Portland,
and you
but it's going to be a problem.
Order online.
It's going to be good for sales.
At Powell's. We'll see you guys Tuesday, June 10th here at Roberta's for the Carnivores Manifesto Party. So for Judy Patrick and Joe in the booth, this is Mike. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.